Hey everybody, Stephen Molyneux from Freedom In. Hope you're doing well. Questions from the great community. I hope you will join it and join us at freedomain.locals.com. Question, whatever happened to the word at war debate or debates? Also, when is the interview with Sam Hyde dropping? Yeah, it's honestly a little frustrating and confusing. The word at war guys contacted me some months ago. I don't receive much communication. I'm not sure what's happening. You know, I mean, I come from sort of a entrepreneurial professional background, so I maybe have sort of slightly different standards. I don't know what's going on. And if they contacted me and I didn't see it, then I'm not sure. So who knows? Sam Hyde, last I communicated with him, he still has a couple of shows in the can before releasing mine. I'm not pleased, of course, that it's taking so long because it was quite a lot of work to get out there. But obviously it's out of my hands at the moment, so... All right. Hi, Steph. In the context of DFU, how can someone recognize when their grief is complete or if they have reached a point of acceptance? Are there specific behaviors or feelings that indicate a shift in the grieving process? Okay, Melissa, it's a great question. Your grieving process is complete when no one in your life reminds you of the abusers, right? Let's say you had abusive parents, you try to work it out, they escalate or manipulate or whatever, right? Refuse to take responsibility and so on. Your grieving process is complete when nobody in your life reminds you of them. In other words, when you have enacted the principle called no manipulation, no lies, no abuse, no aggression, no anything like that. Honesty, right? Honesty and directness is what you want in your relationships. The grieving process is there until the principle is established. Or to put it another way, the grieving process is there until whatever violation of principle allowed the abuse to continue, or the manipulation, or whatever it is, has been sealed and closed off, right? I mean, if you have a hole in your basement, you work until the hole is sealed. How do you, it's like saying, well, if you got a hole in your basement, how do you know there's water pouring in? How do you know when you have fixed the hole in your basement? It's like, well, when when water doesn't come pouring in anymore, that's when you fix the hole in your basement. I remember many years ago, we had a meetup in Canada for Freedom Main listeners. We went on a really wild hike through the woods. We ended up in a swamp and so on. And they end up getting a planter wart or something like that, which is like a little stuff that goes under your skin. I thought it was a, because it felt sort of tender, and I thought it was just a sliver, you know? And so anyway, I ended up having to go to the doctor, and they had to use this freezing to like destroy the planter wart or whatever it was without harming the skin. And I had to keep going back a couple of visits until it was all done. I was like, okay, so how do you know when it's all done? Well, there's no more planter wart and you just have skin left, right? If you have a sliver, how long do you work on the sliver until you get it out, right? So grieving is a process of being sad, not in particular at what happened to you. I mean, unless you're a child, you can't enforce any standards anyway. But grieving is a process of figuring out what violation of principles you were accepting and then sealing up those violations of principles. So, of course, I don't have anyone in my life who's manipulative. And if somebody tries being manipulative, I can't imagine now. It's been years since I've had that happen. But if somebody tries being manipulative, then I will call them out on their manipulation and say, you know, that's not, I don't accept that. That's not how I'm going to interact with you. And then they either stop being manipulative or they're not in my life anymore, right? So I've sort of sealed off those breaks in principles that allowed negativity, abuse, hostility, aggression, manipulation to continue. So grief is being sad that you didn't live according to rational principles, that you didn't live according to assertiveness, according to reasonably good behavior. And so the grief is for the violation of principles through which you allowed yourself to continue to be treated negatively. And I say this with all humility, like I did it for years too, so it's not some big, finger-wagging lecture. But what we are really sad for is our own violation of rational principles and self-esteem and confidence and assertiveness and so on. We're sad at that, and the grieving process is complete when the hole in the principles has been sealed up so that the bad people don't have access to you anymore. All right. Hi, Steph. When do I introduce the concept of allowance to my kids? My oldest is 3.5 years old, and when he breaks a toy or wants something in the supermarket, I would love for him to understand the value of it. He is too young to know the difference in value between $10 and $100. No. No, he's not. No, a 3.5-year-old, if you say, would you rather have one candy or 10 candies, right? You just put one candy in front of him, put 10 candies, and say, which do you want? And you start to teach him numbers and values that way, right? And so he absolutely can understand the difference between $10 and $100. You just teach him a factor of 10 on 1 and 10 and then just go bigger and bigger and so on, right? So, yeah, he can absolutely understand that. So one of the things that I talked about with my daughter is that money is time, right? So I said, look, if somebody makes $5 an hour, now let's make it easy. Somebody makes $6 an hour and a candy bar costs a dollar, you know, what proportion of time is that? You know, well, it's a dollar and $6 an hour. It's 1/6 an hour, 60 minutes. So it's 10 minutes of time. Right. So, and you do this with your beads or whatever it is, right? You have to have visual representations when kids are young, for sure. Sometimes even when you're dealing with adults. So, the dollar is time. Right. And so if somebody makes $60 an hour, a dollar is a minute. So you're not asking for candy, you're asking for time. And you can say, every time you want a piece of candy, that's less time that I can spend playing with you because I have to pay, I have to work to make the money to pay for the candy. So you get candy and you lose time playing with me. And I lose time playing with you. Now, sometimes that's okay. Sometimes we like candy, but... And you don't have to get into all the detailed math, but you say you are getting chocolate or you're getting a chocolate bar or something and you are losing time with me. You can get a toy. That means I have to spend an hour less playing with you, which is fine. Sometimes we need to do that. Like I'll spend an hour less playing with you and hanging out with mom so that I can go and make money doing my work. And so that's fine. Yeah, we need food. We need a roof over our head, we need heating and so on. But having kids understand that money is just a function of labor and time is really, really important. And that way, if you start giving them an allowance for doing chores, which is not too bad, right? I mean, we kind of all do chores and we all get paid for it and so on as a work. And so, yeah, getting kids to understand that it's time. It's really important, and what you don't get anything for nothing. So for kids, you know, one of the dangerous things that happens in the world is kids think that you get stuff for free. Like you, mom and dad just have this big pile of money in their wallets that comes, they just have it, right? They just have it. And they just buy you stuff. And then this translates to the government. You know, the government has a big pile of money and just pays for stuff or gets people stuff. And that's not how... That's not the way of the world. That's not how the world works. All money is time. And so having them understand that is going to give them a good basis for understanding politics and work when they get older. Okay, something to do with tokens and so on. I don't think that's a good idea. I did give my daughter an allowance, and we gave her an allowance for doing some work around the house. And of course, I gave her some money for being in shows. I gave her based upon the views and all of that. So she had an incentive for that. And what we did was we helped her to understand that the time she spent earning that money, right? And I would explain that to her, you know, like you got $6 this week, you buy a candy bar. Well, let's just make it easy. Okay, so you got $7 this week, which is a dollar a day. If you buy a candy bar for a dollar, that's a whole day of chores. Like the candy bar is a whole day of chores. And that's fine. I mean, we have to exchange value and getting to her to understand that. When she wanted more expensive things, I mean, anything, of course, that's required, you know, food, clothing, shelter, some forms of entertainment, that's all paid for by her parents, but I would offer to pay half. If she wanted something that was kind of marginal, like you could live without it, but it's kind of fun, I would offer to pay half. And boy, there's nothing to get kids to stop spending money than to giving them money and having them spend it themselves, right? A third of people have no inner dialogue. Where are you getting this figure from? Yeah, I don't understand that question. I mean, just go look it up. I don't. It's AI, literally go look it up. Steph, why don't you do a series of success call-ins? I love your work and appreciate the moral courage you have to show up and keep speaking to people in need. With this said, even I'm feeling down listening to so many people say they've been listening to you for a decade, still hedonists, their lives are a mess, because they haven't actually applied philosophy. Why are they listening? Is it just entertainment? You know, I know callers are disproportionately reflecting this sad stuff because the successful ones don't have a reason to call in. So I think that's a great idea. I will look into it. Do you think anti-AI sentiment is largely driven by its more immediate threat to immigrant jobs and female-dominated occupations? Would there be as much outrage if the inverse were the case? People are worried about AI. I mean, there is the job-taking aspect of it all, but people are worried about AI in particular, of course, because AI is the foundation for the infinite social credit tyranny state, that AI is going to be used to watch everything you do and scan all your social media posts, both past and present and future, and that you are going to be assigned a social credit score based upon automated analysis on wrong think and good think, and it'll be, of course, immediately staffed by woke people and tyranny-minded people and so on, right? So, I mean, for the left, remember, words are violence and actual violence are just protests, right? That's the sort of hierarchy. So people's, like, trillions of dollars are shifted around the world based on absolute falsehoods. I mean, think of all the bureaucracy, the Doge stuff, the NGOs, the welfare state, the military-industrial complex, foreign aid. Trillions of dollars are moved around the world based on falsehoods, which is why truth tellers get attacked so much. Because if people listen to people like me, then all of that income, that prestige, that status, like, there was some woman, I think she's in her late 50s, she was fired from some NGO because the funding was cut or whatever. And she couldn't get a job. She couldn't even get a job at a fast food place. And so she goes from making 270, what is that, 370, 360 Canadian. She goes from making over $250,000 a year to not being able to get minimum wage. And people will do a lot for free money, quote, free money. People would do a lot to keep their privileges. And so when, I mean, people would kill for $50. Drug addicts will kill for $20, $50, $100. For trillions of dollars or an entire income, status, prestige. I work at this high-powered NGO helping the poor and all of that. People will do a lot to keep that, and I'll eliminate people who get in the way, right? All right. Why do people insist on physically punishing children or yelling? Why do people insist that physically punishing children or yelling is the only way to raise them to behave and be respectful? Oh, it's what was done to them, right? I mean, most people just copy-paste what was done to them and then call it good. Because it's easier. It's easier. I mean, I grew up speaking English. I'm very good at the language. Imagine if, in order to raise my daughter, I had to learn Japanese. I had to never speak English again. And I had to only speak to her, to my wife, in Japanese. And I could only have friends who spoke Japanese, which is fine if you grew up in Japan, but I didn't grow up in Japan, of course. So imagine, okay, you get married, you have to switch to Japanese. You have a kid, you have to switch to Japanese. You have to teach that kid Japanese. Your parents, like the grandparents of the kids, they don't speak Japanese. The aunts and the uncles, the extended family, nobody's going to speak Japanese. And the only way that they can really ever interact with their nieces, nephews, grandkids, is to learn Japanese. that is an exact analogy for peaceful parenting. I grew up being parented by violence, and I have turned to peaceful parenting. So it's not just that you learn a new language and can still speak the old one. You can't. It would be like, I am no longer ever allowed again to speak English. I can only and forever speak Japanese. And anybody who wants to come along on my family journey has to learn Japanese or they can't come along. That's life. If you give up violence and child abuse and aggression and you do all of that, you give all of that up and you now speak the language of peace, reason, voluntarism, non-aggression principle. So why do people hit their children? Because they were hit themselves, and it's tough to learn a new language, and it's tough to realize how evil the people are around you if you give up on violence and you bring peace to your life, peace and reason, negotiation, peaceful parenting. You realize how much everyone around you is cheering on the abuse of children, right? So it's tough to learn a new language. It's easier to just speak the language you've always spoken, do the things you've always done, and everyone around you speaks that language. Because when I really began to live philosophical values consistently in my late 20s, I mean, nobody's left. Nobody from that time. Not one single person is left and hasn't been for decades from that time in my life. Because, I mean, imagine you go to all your friends and you say, okay, listen, guys, let's not speak English to each other anymore. Let's just speak in Japanese. Oh, and you can't talk to anyone who speaks English. You can only speak Japanese. Let's just all go on this journey where we're all going to speak Japanese and learn Japanese and immerse yourself in Japanese culture, and you can't speak to anyone who speaks English anymore. People would look at you like you're insane. And that's what it is to be philosophical. I'm curious the methodology, what questions to ask and answer. Turns out this guy said, well, how come you're not answering my questions? And then I did actually answer his question in the show called War is a Battle of Intelligence. Okay, good. All right, good morning. Quick question. Page. Quick question. All right, well, let me keep it short. Good morning, quick question. I know that you do not like the use of force.
Oh, boy.
How do people do that? Steph, you know, you like cheesecake. You don't like broccoli. Steph, I know you just don't like the use of force. You know, you just, it's not to your taste. It's not to your preference. How do people do that? There's such passive aggression in that. And I'm just pointing it out. It's so passive aggressive to say that my lifelong opposition at great personal cost to violence, to violations of the non-aggression principle, is just a matter of personal taste. It would be like me giving up my entire career and having 15 years of my life destroyed because I like cheesecake. I mean, what do you even say? It's such a terrible way to open a conversation, and it is anti-philosophical, anti-rational, and it's kind of insulting to me to say that I just have this weird obsession, like, I'm willing to cut people out of my life if they happen to like Brussels sprouts, because I don't like Brussels sprouts. And if you like Brussels sprouts, be gone with you. Be gone. I mean, that would be the actions of a crazy person. Why would I sacrifice everything for a mere preference? Anyway, all right. I know you do not like the use of force, but are there any exceptions besides self-defense, etc.? So, for example, during the Great Society, based off Patrick Moynihan's studies, he saw that when there was a rise in welfare among women in the white community, it corresponded with a spike of unemployment for white men. And when white men had jobs, the rate of welfare in the white community went down. So they tried to use the same stimulus in the black community, which culminated in the demise of the black family. But the welfare state is coercion. The welfare state is a violation of the non-aggression principle. It's based upon debt, counterfeiting, and aggression. So... Given the trends of in the West of low birth rates and all the societal problems that come from it, would you advocate some kind of social policy geared towards a more patriarchal society in the best interests of mankind? Well, whatever the question is, the answer is more freedom. Little dowdy. Oh, well, getting older. So, yeah, whatever the question, the answer is more freedom. The problem with the welfare state is it's coercive. It's immoral. It is a violation of the non-aggression principle. It is theft. It is aggression. It is, you know, try deciding to not pay for it. So, I'm not sure where the confusion is. I mean, I know that they're saying, well, you know, it's such an emergency having a low birth rate. First of all, it's not an emergency having a low birth rate. I could care less about a low birth rate. Honestly, I don't care. The problem, of course, is that the low birth rate is used as an excuse for endless massive immigration against the wishes of the domestic population for the most part. So my issue is not with the low birth rate. Who cares? You know, there's, you know, six times the number of people on the planet than there was just a couple of decades ago, or, you know, 50 years ago or whatever, 40 years ago, or at least a century or two. So we've had a massive increase in humanity. I mean, wouldn't you expect there to be a leveling off or a lowering of the birth rate because there's so many people? Yeah. I mean, it's a self-correcting problem as a whole. And of course, you know, when was the last time you were out driving in rush hour saying, well, the problem is there's just not enough people here. Or the last time you went to the emergency room and had to wait 12, 14, 16 hours. Well, the problem is there's just not enough people here. Or try to get a hold of housing at a reasonable cost in order to settle down and start a family. Said, well, you know, the problem is there's just not enough demand for housing. It's too cheap. Or if you go to a hospital and you have to have like 100 different interpreters, the problem is it's just not enough. Different cultures here, you know, so much more efficient. Press 9 for English, right? So I don't care about the low birth rate. The low birth rate is a self-correcting problem. It's not a problem to be solved. It's a problem that the market would solve. If there's a low birth rate, then everything becomes cheaper because you built society, let's say, for the baby boom and so on. And then if there's a low birth rate, the price of housing collapses. Like houses would be going down by 50, 75, 80%, as happened in some places in the 06 or 07, 08 financial crash. So it's not a problem. It's not a problem. Any organisms that multiply to the point where the population will lower. Otherwise, rabbits would have taken over the planet and we'd have an entire biomass the size of the solar system composed entirely of rabbits. So, yeah, all organisms reproduce until they hit their ceiling and then their reproduction slows and stops. I mean, life couldn't survive if there wasn't that aspect. Normally, it's external predation. So we've got AI, we've got robotics, and so on. We don't need all these people. I mean, it's just not necessary. But of course, governments, for a variety of economic and very sinister reasons, being sort of anti-white, because whites don't... high IQ people don't breed well in captivity as a whole. And this is true across all ethnicities and races. But they also cannot afford for housing prices to go down. The banks are heavily leveraged in terms of real estate. Of course, you go to the bank, they make up some money, lend it to you, and then you pay. And if the price of housing goes down, then deflation is terrible for people who hold a lot of assets, because the value of those assets declines, and then they have to sell those assets to keep a 10-to-1 or 30-to-1 ratio of assets to lending. And so when the price of assets goes down, a lot of financial institutions have to sell, which causes the price of the assets to go down even further. And that's fantastic. Young people want the prices of things to go down. How many people have been complaining that there's deflation in the price of televisions or computers, or there's deflation in the cost of a data plan. You know, I mean, I remember when I first got a cell phone, you barely had enough data for a couple of emails. It was brutal. And well, deflation is great, except for people with assets. Right? But the people with assets tend to be the old, the wealthy, the corrupt governments. And so, yeah, deflation is bad for people with assets and people with debt. Because you end up, if there's deflation in the money supply, you end up paying off the debt with money that's worth more, which is negative for you. So everybody rails against, like, when did we ever accept that the Fed target or the central banking target of, like, well, boy, you know, we can't have inflation of less than 2-3% a year. Why do we have any inflation at all? Why not just deflation? The price of everything that we value that's in the free market goes down. Everything else where the government is involved, the price goes up. And of course, there's trillions of dollars of profit riding on the price of those things going up. So people don't want it to reverse as a whole. So yeah, I know they're talking about, well, you know what, now we need to find ways for there to be single mothers. But if you just say, well, society now has to have a birth rate based upon paying women to have children without fathers around, you're just completely wrecking that society, because the children of single mothers, on average, on aggregate, tend to be fairly dysfunctional weirdos and have a lot of social problems, a lot of problems with dating and love and respect, and they tend to be hypersexual and so on. So just saying, well, we'll just have a bunch of single moms, it's not going to solve. And maybe you'll get a small bump, and then you'll just defer the crash to have you even worse later. It's just a drug. So yeah, the solution is Bitcoin. The solution is the free market. The problem, the solution is private property. The solution is the non-aggression principle. So no, I don't believe in any of this sort of nonsense about programs that will magically transform the birth rate. No. And all you need to do, of course, is stop using the force of the government to transfer money from men to women, right? Because that's what it's all about, is transferring money from white males and Asian males to just about everyone else, for reasons we all sort of know about. So yeah, just stop using force to transfer money from men to women, and stop having these hiring quotas and so on. And the problem will solve itself in about 5 minutes. But as long as force is being used, I don't believe that the solution to some force is more force. The solution to some force is no force. Thank you for these great questions. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Have a lovely day. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.